And if you click on today's calendar block, you'll find that event. And that's brought to you as a public service of WEFT. We have four calendars on our webpage, and the public service announcement calendar is one of them. If you have a public service announcement that you'd like us to get on the air for you to help amplify your event, please consider emailing psa@weft.org, and we'll see what we can do about getting your event up on that calendar. Okay, so now, without any further ado, we will get to this week's pre-recorded edition of See You at the Show. Thanks again for listening to WEFT Champaign.
This is Eric Schacht to See You at the Show. We're taking our show on the road once again. We are here on the stage of the Parkland Theater. I'm with my sidekick, LaDonna Wilson.
How are you doing, LaDonna? I'm doing well, although I've cried a lot tonight.
Yes, we have just taken in a preview, the last dress rehearsal of Elephant Graveyard, the masterpiece put on by Latrell Bright and her amazing cast here in the second stage at Parkland.
Black box there.
So I have Latrell with me here, as well as Kimmy Schofield.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to See You at the Show.
Hi.
The road edition. We come to you so we can take in your work and we can all get together and talk about it. And so I will say preliminarily that I read this play early.
Yeah.
I was very interested in being part of it, had my life allowed for me to be part of it, to at least try, because it really is a moving story. I'm aware of the history behind it. And I thought that the play read okay, but this was way, 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 way better than it read. So congratulations.
Thank you. It worked really hard.
It didn't seem like a dress at all.
It seemed very professional, and as if everybody was so in it to win it tonight.
Thank you so much. I'm going to share that with them tomorrow.
Yeah. Is this the, have your other dresses been as like really serious runs as tonight was?
No, they're also tech things. We have the shadow puppetry and we have the red fabric. So those slowed us down a couple of nights. But I think last night and tonight we were able to actually run the show top to bottom without stopping.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether you have an amazing cast, like a very experienced cast, some of the most talented actors around. So I give them, you know, some credit, but the directing is really exceptional because there's so many interesting choices that you made, so much movement and so much a unique use of the space. So I guess let me back up and say, when you took the show, did you know you were going to be in that little theater in the round?
Yes, I proposed it for the second stage.
Okay.
I would never imagine it in a larger space. There's an intimacy that I think is required.
Yeah, being in the tent.
Yes.
Like we were a part of the tent, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
That was part of it. So was that part of your vision to make that intimate?
Absolutely. That was the choice about being in the round. And there were lots of productions that... this play is produced quite often, mostly in high schools, and lots of productions do it proscenium on a kind of a traditional stage, but none of them were as striking as what I wanted ours to be. Yeah.
Well, it was so intimate that not only did I kind of feel as though I was there as a viewer of the circus, perhaps, and also seeing the show, but it was so far as to take me into feeling a little bit like an accomplice in what was going on. And that was hard because it really felt like I too maybe should stop what's happening or have a voice in what's happening or call, hey, Rube, I'm on the team. Please, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I saw Oklahoma this summer New York. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they did was they involved us in the theater in the round is what was happening as an audience member, as a participatory mm-hmm. person, and with the lighting. And the way that you used the lighting was really effective too when you were in the tent, when things were projected, or mm-hmm. not really projected, really just the shadow puppets like you were talking about. So you talked about the space in terms of being in the round. What about the lighting that you wanted to do?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have Brian selected Mike O'Brien to be the set designer, and I knew that he had a background in puppetry. One of the first images I brought in was of kind of a shadow puppetry, industrial-esque kind of image. I knew that I didn't want to have set pieces. It was a large cast, it's a small space. didn't want to have to necessarily bring in real things. And so we talked early on about how to incorporate that. And that's always kind of a balance with lights.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see the shadows, but you need to see the people
right.
as well. And so ultimately, the shadow puppetry is secondary. It's really just to kind of give the audience a sense of feeling. It's not necessarily the focus. You know it's there, it's in your periphery while you're watching whatever's happening mm-hmm. on stage. Structure is really big for me. So the first part is really kind of the dream of what they all think the circus is gonna be. The second part is this kind of the nightmare of the red being, you know, what happens to red, mm-hmm. not wanting to give too much away. And then the last part is just the absurdity that what they do to the elephant is really the circus. So mm-hmm. So that played a large role into how lighting was. And then of course Nick Shaw was asking me, well, when are we inside the tent? When are we outside mm-hmm. the tent? So there's also very practical solutions about being indoors, being outdoors, as well as the feeling of whatever is happening mm-hmm. at the moment.
And yeah. the red lights. Red
right.
lighting coming mm-hmm. into play often.
One thing about this, I mean, I was taken by the shadows and the silhouettes, and I don't know, you know, we're here on the radio talking about Elephant Graveyard, and you've heard us talk about puppets and shadows, but this is it's hard to explain because it's so, you have, I think, either five or six, you have six entry points.
Yes.
And I think you have five curtain points.
Six curtain points, but 4 points for four corners for actual puppetry.
Okay.
Another thing that I would say about the choice of shadow puppetry is I think this kind of storytelling harkens back to old school, old times sitting around a campfire. Everybody knows a piece of the story, and they tell the piece that they know, and kind of take on that character. So we didn't want, we thought about projections at one point, but we didn't want a projector. We wanted something, you know, a light bulb, a cutout of a thing, stick it in front of it. There you go. That's ancient.
Yeah. And this story, I think we talked a lot about it being September, but not the year. Did he ever say the year?
It's 1960.
It said once, I think,
yeah.
when it's during the dream sequence and we're introducing the circus, and it says all new for 1916.
Yes.
So 100 years ago, this sort of lighting, use of silhouettes and puppetry would have been the way that stories were told.
Oh, yeah, it was
and
really
candles.
Big in, like, the candles, if we could.
Right.
Of course, I wanted fire, believe me, I wanted fire. But in, like, the Western shows that they used to do, and in vaudeville, it was all very prevalent, so.
And the physical space is part of it, but also just the way you guys use your physicality to mime, to create the creatures that are there, to create sound. So what was that like as an actor to experience the physicalization of this part, not just the acting?
I had worked with Latrell once before this, and I was in the end part of the show that we did, Sleep Deprivation Chamber, and was in no way a part of any of the movement that Latrell loves
oh, wow, that's
to
right.
do. And I did not see any of it either because I was backstage the whole time. I just had heard that Latrell loves movement, and I had seen some of her other pieces as well. And there's definitely choreographed movement that's very fluid and flowing. And when it started, I looked around and I thought to myself, wow, people just don't have any rhythm. This is, how is this gonna work? And including myself, it's, you are taking yourself completely out of your comfort zone starting off being on stage, mm-hmm. and then when you have to do a movement that is completely unnatural to you, whether it be acting like you are part of an elephant with five other people, or you are all having to breathe together, or you're moving in a way behind a screen so that it gives kind of a mysterious element, it does not make any sense at first, period. But mm-hmm. as you keep doing it, you realize that you can bring your own elements into the movement, whatever that mm-hmm. may be, and that it makes a really beautiful kind of cohesive picture for everything. And being a piece that has so many actors in it, because I refer to it as an ensemble piece, it's nice to be able to add your own element into those movements, even though collectively they're making one big picture. You still have your individual whatever character or little quirk that you do that works really well.
And what a tremendous shift for you to come from On the Exhale, when you were all alone on the stage.
That's correct.
To having this crazy zoo,
circus of
people and characters and just entering and exiting and just being. Yeah, it is very much an ensemble piece.
But
you are magnificent in On the Exhale, and I think I've told you that before. And that was actually the first time I'd ever seen you.
In this show, it's done so well, I think, with Trell made it really creative in the fact that everybody is interacting with each other, even though nobody actually speaks to anyone directly. Everybody just basically has individual monologues, but they're all communicating, telling a story over a timeline, and having the heaviest parts of it being Red and the Elephant Mary in your imagination, I think, is really nice for the audience. I think it takes away from some of the heaviness that's already brought onto the show, but I think that it also allows people to kind of form their own interpretation of this, you know, terrible outcome that happens in the show, because they have to come up with it themselves.
Yeah. Well, you said the name Mary for the elephant. I thought it was interesting how this is written to personalize Mary so much. And Mary is, of course, never said by the people who do not view Mary as
that
having a soul or being or mattering. There's the elephant.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
who told the story about then the elephant did this? And
I think the marshal, one of the town's people, who was not a fan of the elephant.
Or the circus.
Yeah, and so I thought that Courtney being cast as the marshal, because she's also kind of a shorty.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it like an ironic sort of casting, do you think, with her?
It's purposeful.
Yes.
Little man syndrome.
I think we have this idea of who... Okay, am I going to go there?
Yeah,
do
it.
We have this idea of who that person should be, and to put a white guy in it just seemed typical.
Mm-hmm.
Folks came in all shapes and sizes who would have made that choice and done what they did. And I think there really is something about this little blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, sweet little thing. I love Courtney.
Yeah.
Playing that role. And it's kind of I think one of the things that I like to do with casting, because I even think Melissa didn't, she said, I didn't audition for the role of ballet girl. She auditioned for a townsperson. Mm-hmm. There's this type that she thinks she is, just like, well, I don't. there's this this making the familiar strange, or making the strange familiar, that I also like to do, particularly with casting, where people might go, what, for a second? But then over time, they can buy into it and maybe see that kind of character a little bit differently.
I also, that's one of the things I noted, I love that the town looked like a town. Like, it isn't like, everybody's perfect, you know? Like, and if it was, then they wouldn't allow this thing to happen. Like, they're just real people with a real situation, and how do real people handle things? Not always majestically, right? So, jumping to conclusions and allowing their worst fears to take over what they do, so... I love the casting that way, and that's something that I think you excel at.
Oh, thank you very much. I try very hard.
I
surprise people sometimes.
I know I told Trell, and Eric, you had commented coming off of a one-woman show, and I told Trell I don't usually do ensemble pieces. Mm-hmm. I think before the one-woman show, I was in a two-person show, and before that I was in a four-person show, and even in Sleep Deprivation Chamber with Latrell, which had many people, I was in a scene with maybe three other people at one time and didn't really talk to anyone. And I said, one of the things that makes me nervous about ensemble pieces is that I am, and also why I don't direct, is because I'm constantly concerned that somebody's not going to do their line, or somebody's not going to be able to embody the character, or I'm going to be, you know, stepping over somebody, or I'm going to be too big. And I think that all of us ended up just kind of naturally playing off of each other because of where Latrell would put us. She, you know, we were almost all together at all rehearsal every time, even though there's townspeople, there's circus people, there are monologues. but I think it helped us all play off of each other really well and kind of learn a lot and know how to then react and respond, even though we're not talking directly to each other in the show. And Latrell obviously knew that when she cast this and let us have a lot of freedom with what we were doing.
It felt like there were no limitations. Like, you're not limited what part you can be. Mm-hmm. You're not limited in how big of a part you are, right? Depending. So age was not a consideration. Mm-hmm. So that was really nice to see how empowering it is when you aren't limited.
Yes. Right? And Latrell even offered that you can choose a pronoun. If the pronoun that is written in the script is not what you prefer, then you can change it. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't even think of it because my personal pronouns are she and her. But Shorty, the trainer character, all has male pronouns. But, I mean, I didn't say anything. Everybody just kept going with it. And that's fine. And but, yeah, Latrell definitely allows freedom and allows people to basically learn on their own with a lot of nice guidance. And that's what's really nice about working with her. Everybody really respects her and respects her choices, and she always says, yeah, just try something. Like, because I'd be like, hey, Latrell, can I, you know, at this point raise my arm or whatever? I'd be like, just do it. Like, I'd rather you do it, and then if I don't like it or it doesn't work, I will tell you.
So, Kimmy, I don't know if we mentioned it before, but you, your role is trainer.
Yes.
And you have a very kind of like a fierce protectiveness of your trainees, of your of your animals, of your elephants. Are you an animal person?
Yes, I am a largely an animal person. I work at the Humane Society, and even before that, I just had a very strong connection with animals, which I do with people as well. But I I'm really bad at fully reading scripts when they're given to me. So I had read, you know, maybe like half of this script, maybe first. And
But did you look at the title of the show? I did. We're talking about Elephant Graveyard
and
here.
I started reading it and I was like, wow, this flow is really cool. I really like when things are written almost poetically, and I feel like that's how this is. Not that it rhymes, but it has a beautiful, like, timbre and cadence, and it's just beautiful. And then one night we were, you know, going past a point that was more than halfway through the show, and I was reading this monologue, and in the middle of it I just started sobbing in front of everybody, because it had to do with animals and it had to do with the way that people treat animals. And I think another big part of this is how humans interact with each other and treat each other, and, you know, search for salvation and kind of sacrifice things. But that does not negate the point that the animals are such a big part of it, and the trainer, as well as myself, have a huge respect for animals. And I always say, you know, if you're out in Wyoming and a bison charges you because you got out of your car, that's your fault. Like, you didn't respect their space. And, you know, humans, I think, take huge advantage of each other, but also of actual, like, mammals. And that's just, it's just horrible. It's horrible to see, and it's horrible to hear about. And I think that the trainer and herself, Latrell, talked about a little bit, I think that he is protective, but also understands human nature. And it, no decision is easy for him, but he is kind of closed off with his elephants, and he loves it, and that's the role that he has taken on. But he also understands that, you know, people can be cruel.
And you have to make a lot of hard decisions, Shorty does, both because he loves his job. And so I think certainly if he would have seen the road going down that actually happened, he might have said, I'm going to take a chance about my job with Red. But then also just right up to the tragic participation that you have to have, but knowing that it's the best thing under circumstances that you can't change. And that's something I think you're just in our awful world now. Like, sometimes you think about, like, okay, well, we're on this awful course, but we can maybe do a part to make it less awful.
And then that parallel with Courtney and the whole be a dreamer, we're making America, what's it mean to be American, putting things in cages.
Yeah.
Like that hit very hard. And then when Jalen went on with the lynching, I mean, it became like it just went into a different level.
Yeah.
And then like a different level. So like the pain just kept getting deeper.
Yeah.
Right. So I just think that it's so much more powerful than just the elephants. I mean,
yes.
And I said this earlier, that the elephants end up being the most humane, you know, part of the show. So the inhumanity that happens to them, but then the parallels to the other
absolutely,
inhumane things yes. that people do to each other too,
yeah,
I think was really, really powerful.
Yeah. And I always wonder if, you know, what people are going to pick up on in shows, if they're going to see parallels or, you know, people mirroring things or repeating lines or something, because I like to kind of analyze that in shows. And for me, when I actually read the whole thing and when we were working on it, one of the biggest things that came to me was, you know, the hungry townsperson is supposed to be cast as an African-American person. And for me, it's almost automatic that I say, oh, 1916, Tennessee, there's picnic blankets all over the place. This is reminiscent of lynching black people and what people would do to come out.
Right.
And I don't know that everyone will pick up on it, but I think that a lot of people will, and a lot of people will kind of see this as a bigger picture than exactly just animal cruelty.
Yeah, well, it started when Jalen wasn't allowed to talk when they said, well, why aren't you speaking? It was like, oh, we're going there.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it would go there. I was like, oh, we're definitely going
and
there.
And it hits hard. Yeah. It doesn't, they don't directly say it often, but when it does, it's that like key point interrupting the thing that's happening with the animal and it's just parallel with it. And nobody says anything.
Like they say, well, we're not allowed to have a vote. So why would we speak up?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I noticed that early. And I made a note early, right after she said that the colored people stayed quiet. And then I thought, like, maybe there is an allegory here. And it really was, I thought, not subtle. As I saw, you know, the parallels of an act, you know, maybe not a great act, but that was taken by Mary because of the abuse that was put on her, and then the blame that was that was placed without any consideration for the factors.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, this is layers. History.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, layers.
Yeah. And
which is that oral history again.
Yes.
Like especially if we're talking about slave narratives, like you have to tell the story in an allegory because you're not allowed to tell about an actual lynching.
Yep.
So let's talk about elephants.
Yes.
Right? And teach a lesson.
Yep. And it's hard for people, too. I know that there are people who have seen it, who have read it, and they don't want to come back just because it's heavy. And and that, like you were talking about, there's, you know, things that people realize and come to terms with or don't. And I think with animals, I hear it all the time because I'm a euthanasia technician. And for me, if there's an animal who is going to be dangerous or who is suffering or who is a threat or whose quality of life is deteriorating, I'm going to give this animal the best last seconds of its life and I'm going to allow it to go peacefully. And people find it impossible that I can do that. And it's not easy by any means, but it's the reality of the world, I think.
Wow. Well, I can't even imagine that. I mean, there's part of me that's like drawn to hospice, but because of the importance of last moments that I think people have. And so, I'm grateful to you for being there for these poor creatures who deserve it.
And they're people who love them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's a hard decision to make
that
decision.
The people who love them, absolutely.
Which is really what the trainer does, is makes the decision because it's going to be worse.
Yes.
Like it's that whole George Lenny thing, right?
Yes.
Like, you know it's going to be worse, so let's do it the most humane way possible. And then you have to see the play to know how that works out.
There's a book called Circus that I checked out at the library. It's a big, beautiful book with lovely photos, lots of information, and there's a whole chapter on elephants. And it's interesting that it's in this chapter on elephants that it talks about idea of dominion over some live beings.
Especially such a powerful being.
Especially right? such a powerful yeah. being, because if you have a gun,
mm-hmm.
or at least you think, or a right. Civil War cannon, or mm-hmm. a machine gun, mm-hmm. or a rifle, I think mm-hmm. is what he said.
Rifle, yeah.
yeah.
But then you get, like, your master of industry, the crane. Have you seen, there's a picture of the crane out in the lobby.
No.
It's yeah, a beast.
The lobby's a whole, got
it
a whole bunch
really
of stuff
is.
There.
It's a, it's this, it's just a frightening piece of
yeah,
machinery.
It is.
It really is.
Well.
That it could conquer an elephant.
I thought that, I haven't seen Aaron Clark on stage in a long time, and I was really pleased to see him in that role, and he does it so well, and just, I mean, a lot of his spoken stuff was strong, but man, when he paces around, that is just—I mean, it's bad, but I got goosebumps.
Yeah.
I mean, because it was fierce. There's like the love and the sadness, and then the cause
the
of it,
stomping
and
that anger.
Yeah, and just like right, and so many other people, like even like even yeah. Crystal, you know, had this moment of like, oh, this is too much. And now there's a connection. I have a bad leg and what this happened. And so now I don't see the ugliness anymore. Mm-hmm. I see the pain. Mm-hmm. But then there are people who are just never going to see it. He's yeah. never going to see it. Mm-hmm. And you know, when the poor other guy's helping Zoe, the clown. Mm-hmm. I mean.
He's the one character who has the largest kind of arc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because he starts like gung ho and he ends up having actually learned something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really important moment.
Yeah.
And then the tragic clown always, mm-hmm. right? That is it really funny? Is anything really funny?
Well, so he brought that out.
Mm-hmm.
That was going to be in the show. That was Zoe. And we thought it came out in like one of the very first rehearsals. It was like, oh, sad clown. I hadn't thought about sad clown.
Well,
I love
she's
it.
Great.
Yeah, there's just so much great deadpan stuff. And I've been saying for a long time that Zoe Dunn is the most underrated talent. So thank you for using her, as LaDonna has done, and as I hope the directors of Chicago do.
And I wanted a tall clown.
Yeah, it was perfect. Again, was all of the contrast of, you know, the vertical stripes and her costume. And it was just a great play on the yeah. circus and how the circus itself usually has, mm-hmm. you know, all the things that you would see yeah. there.
Well, we've talked about this and we're out of time, but we've talked about it and there's a lot of dark things and a lot of hard things. But it's also, I wouldn't say that there's fun parts to it, but there's a really, it's cast so well and it's fun to see Parker Evans as a ringmaster because I actually can see him almost like in a snake oily salesman kind of way, kind of in a P.T. Barnum kind of way. Like not the greatest showman, but like mm-hmm. the slimiest showman. Yeah. Yes, we both did the same word. Yes, the yeah. slimiest showman starring Parker Evans.
And hardly realistic. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. yeah. there's a practicality yeah. to his character
yes.
that is money. Not evil. Like there's mm-hmm. just a, like, he's there's something in there that's just logical, right? That mm-hmm. then you like, do I hate you? I do. But should I? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, the intro music that I use to our show is mm-hmm. Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
And the show must go on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that in the movie, you know, that's and so Jim Broadbent, his character, is so awful, but it's kind of the same way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little sad what has to happen to her.
Yeah.
But the show must go on. Yeah. You know, it's just so. Oh, Lincoln should do that song. Lincoln, yes, yes, yes. When we do Moulin Rouge here, if you direct it, mm-hmm. Lincoln. Perfect. Lincoln.
Well, I want to say that the show is so interesting. Mm-hmm. Like it's thought provoking. I was saying earlier, I saw the ring hanging there. I was like, how is this going to work?
Sure.
And then I kept waiting for it to fall and go back up. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think there's. There hasn't been a lot in the community that I've went to recently where I've thought as much as I did in that yes. hour and a half. So I think people who love theater should go to see a show that's going to make you love theater.
Yeah. yeah. And yeah. you're fully immersed. It's yes. just, it's really beautiful.
The actors are fully immersed and the audience is fully immersed.
We didn't mention everybody in the cast, but it's a magnificent cast and there's just, It is a real ensemble piece, mm-hmm. and it's fast moving. It's a one act show. I think tonight
70 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It starts and then boom.
And we open tomorrow night.
Yes.
At Parkland. And how long is the run? Is it two weeks?
Weekends.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Matinees on Sundays.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
And are they doing 3 o'clock matinees?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. We have properly plugged. So thank you so much, Latrell and Kimmy, for coming on to see you at the show.
And thank you for your art.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
And best of luck with this run, because I'll do everything in my power, our power, to get people out to see it, because it should be seen. So thank you for joining us on See You at the Show.